Hello and welcome back to another episode. Today we have a special guest on, and today's topic is what options are available for college savings. And our special guest today is Jack Wang. He is a wealth advisor at Innovative Advisory Group and the Smart College Buyer Program. And what we're starting today is a little mini series that we're doing on saving for college and financial aid. And Jack is also going to be joining us on our taxonomization program. We're going to be diving deeper into these items. So there's going to be three parts to this podcast, mini podcast series. And then as well as we'll kind of expand on what we talk about here within our taxonomization program. If you are not a member yet of our taxonomization program, check it out now. You can go to taxsavingspodcast.com/tax. Jack, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I am really excited about this topic. It's something that we haven't talked about before, you know, anything around kind of financial aid and college savings and all those items. So I'm really excited. And I think this is something that our listeners are really just going to dive into and really take a hold of. So let's get kind of started. What options are available out there for college savings? So let's think of, we can use me as a perfect example. We have a 1.5-year-old. We plan to save for some college. You know, we're looking for options available out there. What are some of the first things or first steps that you talk to when you're talking with some parents about wanting to save for college for their children?
Yeah, that's a great question. And of course, there's no shortage of options that are available. So the short answer is you can save in whatever vehicle you want, right? And I'll circle back to that. We can talk more about specific things. But I think that families need to spend a little bit of time on answering this question first. And that is, what do they actually mean by saving for college? And so my experience in working with families, you know, if you ask a family, if you ask a set of parents, hey, do you want to save for college or help your child pay for college down the road? Of course, the people who come to me and given what I do, the answer to that is always yes. So I've never had any pushback on that. Mm-hmm. But that leaves a lot of leeway. And what happens is the real answer to that question really depends on each parent's their background and their college experience and what their parents did for them. So it's not uncommon for one parent to say something like, you know, I had to work my way through school. And my parents didn't give me everything. So I'm only willing to save for half of the cost of an in-state college, which today most states would be around, say, $14,000 to $15,000, right? Most in-state schools, right around $30,000 all in. But then I've had other parents say, you know, the other spouse of that first one say, well, you know, my parents really helped me out. And so I didn't have to take on any debt and I didn't have to work. So I could really focus on my studies and enjoy the college experience. So I want to help pay for 100% of a private school. Well, again, they're not wrong answers, but what that also means is 100% of a private school today is up over $80,000. Right. So now if you sort of do the time value money calculation, you work it backwards. So what does that mean in terms of monthly payment? Well, those are very, very different, right? If you're aiming to hit $15,000 or you're aiming to hit $80,000 per year, that's literally night and day. The other thing is whether or not you even want your son or daughter to go to college. And so, for people who come to me, the answer is they always want to go to college. However, there are times where people say, you know what, though, but if instead of going to college, my son or daughter went right into business and then they needed help with a down payment to buy a house or something or to start a business, right? I would like to be able to use the money for that as well. So it's not that these parents don't want their kids to go to college. It's that they recognize that there might be alternative paths and their son or daughter might go to college at another time. And actually just a little bit more context on that particular, in that particular instance, this particular family I worked with years ago, both of the parents had advanced degrees. Both of them were doctoral level degree holders or doctoral level candidates, I think at the time. So for me to hear them say, well, you know, we're not going to force our kid to go to college, was really kind of surprising given the amount of college that each one of them had, right? But it was just their choice and they recognized that there are different paths. So that's okay. So I always encourage families to really think about this first, right? And then we can talk about what the different options are because you know, different options can have different restrictions. I know we'll talk about that in a little bit. But really, it's really about this values proposition and the emotional and kind of their own experience, right? Start with that first, then we talk about options later.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. And we talk about that so much, even on the tax saving strategy and, you know, looking at saving for your own retirement, you know, depending on what vehicle you use, there's a question that you start with before that. So it's not just, here's the right vehicle, they'll get it. It's a question you have to ask before that. And, you know, if we look at retirement, it's, do you have employees or not employees? Are you looking to maximize your retirement or just put some money away? And that will kind of determine your vehicle. So when we look at the different types of vehicles, obviously most people have probably heard of 529 plans out there, but what are some of the popular options that people can look at as far as a vehicle once they've determined, you know, okay, we have an idea of how much we want to save, how we want to save it, how we want to access it. You know, what are some of those vehicles out there that people could get into?
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. Of course, like, as you said, the most popular is a 529 plan. And so for listeners, just to be fully transparent about this, there's actually two types of 529 plans. There's one type called the prepaid tuition plan, and then there's really the qualified savings vehicle, which is what everybody knows. The prepaid tuition plan is really not that prevalent these days. This was really a type of 529 plan that started out when 529 plans were first introduced. Bonus points if anybody knows why a 529 plan is called a 529 plan. As you can run a contest or something on your blog, on the podcast later. But basically what happened was these prepaid types were that if you put in a sum of money today, and let's say that the amount of money you put in today was equivalent to 50% of the in-state college tuition, then no matter the market performance and no matter what happens to college costs, that by the time your son or daughter goes to use that prepaid tuition plan, then the amount of money you would have in there would be equivalent to 50% of whatever the tuition is down the road, right? But, you know, then questions came up, well, what if they don't go in-state school? What if they go out of state and stuff? And there are provisions for that, but it just got a little bit confusing. So those have really fallen by the wayside. They do exist, but not many of those will accept new money today. Then you have sort of the savings version of the 529, which is the most popular and what tends to get the most press, is where families can save money in a 529. The money can grow tax deferred as long as the money is used for so-called qualified expenses, whether for college or now the law allows for like private K through 12 school tuition as well as a one time per life, okay, not per year, but per lifetime used to pay down student debt. But these, as long as those withdrawals are for those type of reasons that I just outlined, then the withdrawals would be tax-free. So there are a number of advantages, right? You get the potential for growth, potential, I emphasize, and you get the tax-deferred growth and the potential for tax-free withdrawals. And your contribution limits can be rather high. And of course, you have your choice of investments, investment companies, et cetera, et cetera. And on top of that, of course, because this is the podcast about taxes, in some states, some states do offer a state tax incentive for contributing to their own state plan, right? So, for example, here in Massachusetts, where I'm based, if you contribute to the Massachusetts sponsored plan, you get a state tax credit, state income tax credit. The downsides, of course, is that you only have the investment choices that are in the plan, which sometimes can be limited. Sometimes the fees can be high. But more than that, right, depending on how you answered that first question we discussed about, hey, do you want this money to go to college or potentially something else? That's that's really one of the big downsides of 529 plan, is because the money inside of 529 plan can only be used for education and not for anything else without having to pay taxes and a penalty, a 10% penalty. So if you're the family where it's like, you know, I'm all in on college and I know that they're going to college and that's it, then sure, 529s may be a really good choice. But on the other hand, if you're the type of family, like I mentioned, where, hey, you know what, college is definitely an option, but, you know, if they go right into business or they, you know, they want to buy a house, maybe I want to use the money for that or start their own business or something, then a 529 is probably not the right choice because of the restrictions, right? So there are pros and cons. That's why you got to answer the first question first. Other, you know, beyond that, there's the world is really your oyster in terms of saving for college. There can be Roth IRAs, whether for the parents or the students themselves, if they work, right? If you have earned income, you know, all things being, you can contribute to a Roth IRA. Those can be very effective and give you a little bit more flexibility. Of course, traditional IRAs, 401ks, of course, you know, generally you try not to save for retirement, then tap for college as a general rule of thumb. But that doesn't mean you can't. People use non-qualified investments like just index funds or just, you know, brokerage accounts. I know families who have also purchased investment real estate when their children are born and used a 15-year mortgage to pay off that real estate so that come college time, that entire property is mortgage free and they would then either sell off the property to have the money to pay for college or just derive the rental income. There's almost no limit to how you can save for college. It just depends on how much flexibility you want, and sort of what you are comfortable with, right? Because not everybody is necessarily comfortable with buying rental real estate as a way to save for college, but it does exist. Also keep in mind, especially because this is a tax-focused podcast, college costs are an after-tax cost, right? So just as an example, if you think about a school that's $80,000 a year and your marginal tax bracket is 20%, you really have to earn $100,000 a year to then pay the taxes, to then be left over with $80,000 a year to pay said college. So while taxes may not be a giant issue for everyone, that should be consideration here, both on the, you know, the growth of the earnings inside whatever investment you're doing, but also just in terms of how you pay for it, whether or not there are certain tax credits or certain tax strategies that may be available that can also help you. So taxes should never wag the dog, right? The tax tail should never wag the dog, I think is the saying. But taxes can be an important component here when thinking about how to save.
Yeah, and I think those are great points. And, you know, in future episodes that we're doing as part of this mini-series, we're going to be talking about financial aid and how that kind of plays into it and getting funding for paying for college. And so I guess as we're talking about financial aid, how does how we determine or what vehicle we choose for college savings come into play for that? And I guess what I mean is there certain vehicles that we would try to avoid simply because it might hurt us down the road if we look for financial aid? Or is there a certain way, like if we're going to invest in a brokerage account or something like that, should that be in our child's name? Should that be in the parent's name? Can you get some insights onto that?
Sure. That's a great question. That's probably the one that confuses people the most because it's, you know, you hear a lot of things like, oh, you know, if I save my child's name, it'll hurt my chances for financial aid, or 529s hurt financial aid, or whatever, right? And those are, and of course, like anything you see on the internet or hear on the internet, there's always an element of truth, but it always varies based on specific circumstances. So the reality is this. You have to understand sort of how financial aid works. And the short version is financial aid is based primarily on income and not assets. So if your family income is so high, whatever number that means, that you're not going to qualify for what's called need-based financial aid anyway, then it really doesn't matter how you save or whose name it's in, right? So oftentimes one of the rules of thumb out there about financial aid is don't save in your kid's name because it'll hurt your financial aid. Well, if you're not going to get financial aid anyway, then who cares? Right. And in fact, if you think about it through the lens of taxes, you may want to save in your kid's name because presuming, you know, kiddie tax notwithstanding, but presumably, you know, they're going to be at a lower tax rate than what you're at. But also financial aid, it's very similar to taxes, but has some important distinctions. So let's just take 529s as an example. Okay. So if the family owns it, typically the parents. And by the way, I'll just make this one clarification. Oftentimes families will say, well, my son has a 529. Okay. But 99.9% of the time, what they really mean is that I, as the parent, own it with my son as the beneficiary, right? 529s always have two names, right? The legal owner and the beneficiary. So as the legal owner, as the parent, I have to report that. That's a parental asset. But today, if you take money out of a 529 for qualified expenses, it's not counted as taxable income. But if a grandparent owned the 529 for the grandchild beneficiary and the grandparent took money out of the 529, that's still a qualified withdrawal in most instances. So it's not taxable. But it does count for financial aid purposes. It actually counts as income. So if you do qualify for financial aid, then you're absolutely right. Then where you save, what types of accounts, who owns it actually now really matters, because you want to be really careful about not only how the tax law treats it, but also how financial aid treats it. So another quick example, distributions from Roth IRAs for college expenses would otherwise be tax-free, but still counts as income for financial aid. Okay. So now you have to do some timing, some strategies, but those rules are actually about to change in academic year 24-25, which I know we'll talk about later, but it's really based on the 22 tax returns. So in other words, it's changing right now, where grandparent-owned 529 withdrawals and like Roth IRA withdrawals will no longer count as income for financial aid. So these rules evolve as well. But there are these little nuances. So the bottom line is, if you think you qualify for financial aid because you either are lower income or you plan on being lower income, I don't know how many people plan that. But if you're going to qualify for financial aid, then yes, where and how you save it absolutely matters. If you're not going to qualify for financial aid, then it doesn't matter. Then do whatever you want. One other quick note about 529 specifically, and what I'm about to tell you, no college will ever repeat, right? And it's one of those Loch Ness monster things, like people know it exists, but you can't really prove it, type of urban legend type of things. However, I do know that some colleges will view 529s and treat them more heavily than other types of assets. So if you had $100,000 in 529s and the same exact family instead, compared with the same exact family that has $100,000 in the checking account, for financial aid formula purposes, they're treated exactly the same. But some private colleges in that example will give the family with $100,000 in 529s $25,000 less in aid, right? 100,000 divided by four, because 529s are meant to be spent down, whereas checking accounts aren't. So no college will ever admit to that. I only know that because through experience, and I've seen it sort of anecdotally enough. But, you know, if you end up applying one of those colleges, that, or you think you might want to apply to one of those colleges, then that also could factor in.
Got it. That makes complete sense. And you know, one thing that you mentioned that I really want to touch on, because it plays really well into other tax strategies that we talk about for small business owners, is this idea of a Roth IRA. And so one of my favorite strategies when you have children is to hire your kids in your business. You get a business expense and it's tax-free income to your children if it's under a certain dollar amount. Traditionally, in certain situations, you don't have to pay withhold FICA, Medicare, anything like that. And so the cool thing about that is once you start paying your children, it allows them to then contribute to a Roth. And typically the downside of a Roth is you get no tax deduction going into it. But if they have no income or no taxable income, there's no need for a tax deduction. And it's almost like a free, you're not getting a deduction going in, but you don't need one because you don't have income. And you can withdraw tax-free. And the cool thing about Roth is you can withdraw the principal portion prior to, you know, the retirement age. So I think that Roth idea is something that we try to pair very well along with the hiring your kids strategy. So it's just interesting that you brought that up as well.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. And I omitted this from the ways to save, but I will tell you that one of the best ways to save for college is to start your own business, right? For exactly the reason you just said, because you can hire your kid. Now it's funny. Now, again, I want to emphasize, I'm not a labor law attorney. Okay, please consult your experts on this and on all the standard disclosures, but I've done this enough. And actually, if you look up like federal law around hiring your children, there's really three things that they can't do, right? In terms of type of work. Number one is agricultural work. So you can't hire all your children to go pick grapes or lettuce or whatever in the fields if you own a farm, which isn't a problem for most people. That's number one. Number two is they can't operate heavy machinery. So no backhoes, no cranes, whatever. Again, usually not a problem. The third one, though, I just think it's kind of funny. It's actually in the law, in the text. There's no handling of explosives. Okay, so you can't. I don't know how often you get into that, Mike, or how often you use explosives in your industry, in your business, but that's just not allowed. But other than that, it's pretty much fair game. So you're right, right? Because the standard deduction for a single person is $12,950. And if you make sure you dot all your I's and cross all your T's and you pay a reasonable wage for reasonable work, then really anything $12,950 or below becomes tax-free income because you get the benefit of the standard deduction for the student. One thing to watch out for, and this is if you do qualify for financial aid, this is where financial aid regulations diverge from taxes. In financial aid regulations, if a student earns over a certain amount, then that will hurt them for financial aid. And that amount in 2022 is $9,410, right? So if you're a business owner that would otherwise qualify for need-based financial aid, you don't want to have your kid earn more than $9,410 because every dollar above that, right, regardless of the income source, right, whether it's earned income, interest, dividends, capital gains, whatever, but every dollar above that reduces their financial aid by 50 cents, right? It's like a 50% marginal tax rate if you think about it. So it really hurts. So, but again, if your income is such that you're not going to qualify for aid, then again, pay him whatever you want. Just remember, no playing with explosives.
Yeah, that's great advice. And so this is, again, what we're talking about today is just a beginning part. And we've been talking about financial aid, how that works into things. And so within the next two episodes in this mini series that we're doing with Jack, we're going to be talking about the basics around financial aid and then what strategies are out there to increase financial aid. But I think this was a great episode to talk about to start with. We're talking about kind of what options are available for college savings. And really the idea comes down first is, how do we want to save? You know, it has to have a conversation. It's just not just, okay, we're going to save for college. We want to have that conversation first about how much are we willing to save for them? What if they decide not to go to college? How does that look? And that's going to help to kind of determine which vehicle, whether it's a 529 plan or a Coverdell or a custodian account or a brokerage account or iBonds or whatever it might be. There's a lot of vehicles out there to save, but you need to first kind of answer some questions that go into that first. So, Jack, you know, thanks again for jumping on this episode. We're going to, again, continue this mini-series. And next week, we're talking about the basics around financial aid. And before we go, Jack, can you just let people know where they can find you? We're also going to have a link in the show notes to a blog post that Jack wrote for us. In there, there's going to be a form that you can fill out to get introduced to Jack so that we can introduce you guys right directly if you want to have that conversation with them, whether, you know, wherever you are in that journey for college savings. But Jack, let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. The best way people can reach out to me is via email. It's Jack, J-A-C-K, at innovativewealth.com. You can go to the website, innovativewealth.com, or people can find me on LinkedIn. Or if you're on Facebook, look for my Facebook page called Smart College Buyer. And both on LinkedIn and on the Facebook page, I publish a weekly-ish video podcast and other content on there about financial aid and college admissions. So people can actually learn a lot about this process through that as well.
Excellent. That's great. And again, we'll have a link in the show notes to an article we did. And within there, you'll be able to set up a time where we can get an introduction with Jack. So Jack, thanks again for joining this episode, and everybody else, we will see you next week when we continue this mini-series on college planning for your children.